This is a Dubai Eye 103.8 podcast.
Hello there and welcome to the Bite Size Business Breakfast. The very best bits of today's show from Monday, the 11th of April, lovingly curated, as always, by our producer, Isa Havilia. What have we got for you today? Talking cryptocurrencies, because Binance, the world's biggest crypto exchange, setting up shop in Abu Dhabi. We're going to speak to Richard Teng of Binance and the regulator of Abu Dhabi Global Market as well. Sri Lanka, the economic situation there is very, very serious, largely due to inflation, but other things going on as well. Tom, fascinating interview with Professor Vidura Tenakoon on that issue. And staying with economics and staying with the issue of rising prices, we've been joined in the studio by Ziad Daoud. Now, he's with Bloomberg Economics. He's the head of emerging markets at Bloomberg Economics, based here in Dubai, talking about rising food prices in particular and the situation in Ukraine and Russia. First up, though, here's Serena.
Morning, guys.
Getting loads of questions in about e-scooters. What's the deal?
Well, over the weekend, we did have an update. So you all know, you're fully aware how we will need a permit to ride an e-scooter in Dubai. This is if you're age 16 and above. So you're going to be able to apply for one at the end of the month, end of April. That is the deadline, according to the RTA. Remember, this is only for those 16 and above, because anyone younger than that are not allowed to operate or ride an e-scooter. So the permit you apply for online is free. Just have to visit the Roads and Transport Authority's website, apply there, and everything will be available by the end of the month. But you do need to attend a training course and pass an online test as well. But if you already have a valid driving license, that could be UAE or international, you will not need to have a permit. Only those with RTA permits will be allowed to take to the roads or your driving license. The e-scooters will be allowed in designated areas. So what they're doing is they have dedicated cycling tracks in 10 districts for the e-scooters. This is all part of phase one. So those are Sheikh Mohammed bin Rashid Boulevard, Jumeirah Lakes Towers, Dubai Internet City, Al Riga, 2nd of December Street, Palm Jumeirah and City Walk. These will be open from Wednesday, April 13th for e-scooter riders. Also covers tracks within specific zones at Al Qusais, Al Mankul and Karama. And you also have the 167-kilometre long tracks designated for bicycles and scooters across Dubai. But it excludes cycling tracks at Sayyid Al Salam, Al Qudra and Maidan. So these areas have been selected because they've been doing the testing phase, and they've been identified as busy areas served also by public transport and metro stations. Because what they've found is that people who have e-scooters or rent them, they will be able to get them from these select areas and basically take them to their next port of call, so to speak. You should be aware that also when it comes to parking, dedicated parking slots for your e-scooter, otherwise it's a fine of 200 dirhams. These will be available at tourist attractions around public transport stations. And because they also announced you've got the four companies that have been given the rights to operate and rent e-scooters in these designated areas as well.
What about riding the wrong way up Hesse Street at 5 o'clock in the morning when it's pitch black, which I see every day on my way to work?
Yep.
Not allowed.
No, I would say that would come under the training the training guidelines, because I think that's because they want to make sure that everybody's fully aware of the road rules. So hence why if you have a valid driving license, you've already experienced that sort of course or workshop prior.
Don't go the wrong way up a busy highway.
I would not advise it.
Right,
yes.
Okay. I live in one of these kind of gated communities, as do you. And the kids are on the e-scooters all the time, night and day, flying around, no helmets. I've written to, you know, whoever runs our community saying, is this allowed? Because I don't think it should be. I think it's dangerous. But does the RTA hold sway in these areas? Because they're proper roads. I mean, I drive my car along them all the way. They're not on pavements. They are on roads where cars drive. And I just wonder if what it means. Tom, you live in a community, don't you?
They annoy me, these things. I know that that probably annoys a lot of people that are listening at the moment. There's a couple of reasons. One, kids in the community that we have, a lot of blind corners, and they come hurtling round these corners. And it's just one of those things that, you know, as much as you try and speak to the children, to parents, etc., it's just one of those... accidents waiting to happen. The other thing that really winds me up is when people approach them, use their e-scooters on pedestrian crossings. And I know that's a really old man thing to say, and again, probably a bit grumpy, etc., on a Monday morning. But it's a pedestrian crossing. It's for feet, isn't it? It's for people. It's for pedestrians with feet. That's where the word pedestrian comes from. Not someone on an electric scooter. But again, that sort of plays into the confusion as to what are these people? Are these people drivers on the roads of the UAE, or are they pedestrians on the pavements of the UAE? If you're an electric scooter, what are you?
Can we get some more detail on the Kinder chocolate egg story, which has grabbed the global consciousness?
Yeah, it has. Well, we've had reports from Abu Dhabi. The markets there are completely free of Kinder products suspected of being linked to food poisoning in some European countries due to salmonella infection. So last week, if you recall, we were reporting that following cases of the infection being reported in Europe, some Kinder products were being recalled here in the UAE, specifically that large Kinder Maxi chocolate egg, which you've probably seen on the shelves, the 100 gram one. So this, it was because it met certain criteria linked to the cases. So it was only the ones that were being recalled or taken off the shelves that were manufactured in Belgium and had an expiry date of October this year. Now, the Abu Dhabi Agriculture and Food Safety Authority have confirmed their inspectors have been checking Abu Dhabi markets. They've also been liaising with suppliers and food facilities. And what they found is they have confirmed that the products currently in Abu Dhabi's market are safe. They've also checked shipments of Kinder products entering the capital. They've confirmed that there were no suspected batches that have come into the country. So that is just something that you can be reassured about, especially with the upcoming celebrations with Easter, a lot of people buying these chocolate eggs, obviously, to celebrate. But authorities are calling on the public, please do not get caught up in rumours or circulate any anonymous information about food safety. Please contact them, communicate with them. Any complaints or concerns that you have related to food safety, you can contact them via their media platforms or through their call centre, 800-555. And the inspection teams will take these queries or any information quite seriously and obviously take the necessary measures to investigate as well.
Be interesting to think, maybe we'll do something on Easternomics, how big a deal it is. I'm not sure it's going to move the needle at supermarkets, is it? But I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong. We'll do some digging over the next few days and we'll find out.
I definitely feel they've gone up in price, that's for sure. Well, not Kinder. I'm talking about just purchasing Easter eggs in general.
Hasn't everything, Serena? very quickly, 30 seconds, the latest on the 1 billion meals initiative.
So the largest food donation drive of its kind in the region, 1 billion meals. In just 6 days, the initiative has collected 76 million meals. We're officially 10 days in today into the holy month of Ramadan. If you do wish to donate, just visit their website, 1billionmeals.ae.
Serena, thank you very much indeed.
More details on the Air and News Centre app.
This is the Bite Size Business Breakfast, exclusively on DubaiEye1038.com.
Let's talk about the cryptos now, because big deal in Abu Dhabi over the past 24 hours. Binance, the world's biggest crypto exchange, has been awarded in-principle approval for a financial services license from Abu Dhabi Global Market. Delighted to be joined on the line now by not only Richard Teng, regional head for the Binance in the Middle East and North Africa, but also Daha Bin Daha, CEO of the Registration Authority at Abu Dhabi Global Market. Richard Teng, first of all, good morning to you, sir.
For having me.
It's good to have you again on the Business Breakfast. So this is becoming a bit of a habit, it would seem, Richard. You've got a license in Bahrain. You've got some kind of license here in Dubai. We spoke about that a couple of weeks ago. And now Abu Dhabi. What's the thinking?
Well, first of all, it's a good habit to get into. we are the most licensed and compliant global exchange in the MENA region. I'm very happy to report that. So we have 3 approvals in the course of the last month. But our strategy is very simple, right? We want to work very closely with global regulators in the MENA region where there are licenses available. We want to work very closely with the regulators to determine whether it makes sense for us to do so commercially. And if so, we want to support the local agenda. Where there are no licenses and regulators will really wish to support innovation, Web3 development, deployment, crypto adoption, we want to work very closely with regulators to formulate those frameworks that can manage risk from a financial stability standpoint, manage investor risk, at the same time support innovation.
So how are they different, the deal you've done in Bahrain, the deal you've done here in Dubai, and now the deal you've done in Abu Dhabi? From the perspective of a Business Breakfast listener who's maybe trading cryptos, how does it impact them?
Well, they will be quite different from a deployment angle. So in Abu Dhabi, we are looking at a broker-dealer framework, which is a one-click buy-sell, allowing players to buy and sell crypto quite easily. There are a lot of institutional players in Abu Dhabi, and we are looking at the likes of custody deployment in Abu Dhabi as well. The Dubai deployment at this stage will be much wider, that spread across the different asset classes that we have, and so will the Bahrain deployment. So as the frameworks develop, we will look to work very closely with the regulators to determine what products and services make sense for the local environment, what are the rules and framework available for us to do deployment, and we'll progress from there.
So can we now call Binance a UAE-based organization? We know that you're a regular feature here. CZ, your founder, one of the world's richest people, is a regular here in Dubai among the fine dining restaurants in town. Is Binance UAE-based now? Is it Singapore-based? How would you define it?
We are a global organization. We are all over the world. We are the largest crypto infrastructure blockchain provider in the world, right? We have a comprehensive suite of products that include having the largest virtual asset exchange globally. So, but we do global deployment. Our top management is deployed globally. MENA obviously is a very important region for us. I'm based here with several other executives, but we have deployment in important regions, Europe, Latin America, Asia Pacific. So we do global deployment.
Well, I'm going to bring in the regulator now to talk about this. Daha Bin Daha joins us now live from Abu Dhabi. He is the CEO of the Registration Authority at Abu Dhabi Global Market. Talk to us about the process of getting this over the line, cryptocurrency regulation. It's very new for most of us, including regulators. What were the challenges and how did you get it over the line?
Well, I mean, for ADGM, we've launched our virtual assets framework in 2018, which makes us really the largest when it comes to crypto or virtual assets as a regulator. And how did we reach there? Of course, by working closely with the players in this field, ensuring that both the regulator and the business actually come in a place together where they're comfortable, by ensuring, of course, the investor protection element and ensuring a smooth journey. Of course, this is a growing environment. It's a new, and on the new age finance, ADGM being pioneering, and we will be always looking into the support and growth of this sector.
What do you say to people who have some concerns over cryptocurrencies, particularly the myth or the reality that they are often used by people with a criminal intent, either people who are laundering money or people dealing in illicit goods or illicit materials? What do you have to say to those people?
So part of our process is really we've looked at all the due diligence and KYC elements. Of course, it's a new industry, and I think we should be more lean on looking at regulated exchanges and regulated areas where there is a supervision by the regulator across these transactions. Of course, there are different players that will support all of this through financial institutions, the regulator, and of course, the exchange with embedded great KYC processes in between.
So, would you expect crypto exchanges to have a physical presence within Abu Dhabi Global Market on Al Maria Island, or can it be virtual?
Every entity that is licensed and registered within ADGM do have a physical presence within the island, so nothing would be on a virtual aspect. So there would be a team on the ground working, and would be working also closely with the regulators. On Maria Island, we're just a walking distance away.
Daha Bin Daha, CEO of the Registration Authority at Abu Dhabi Global Market. Final word to Richard Teng of Binance, Bahrain, Dubai, Abu Dhabi. 20 seconds, where's next?
Global. We are doing global deployment. We offer the lowest fees, most comprehensive products. So I think our users who are very, very loyal to us will be very happy that we are doing global deployment and supporting us. And thank you so much for your support.
Hey, we're delighted to have you here in the UAE. Appreciate your time this morning. That's the voice of Richard Teng. He's the regional head for the Middle East and North Africa at Binance.
Catch up on the business headlines with the Bite-sized Business Breakfast.
Let's turn our attention to some of the big talking points of the weekend. And one of those, obviously, is all things Sri Lanka. The links between the UAE and Sri Lanka, well known, be they tourism, trade or otherwise, as was borne out by the fact when we spoke to the Sri Lankan Business Council later last week. But as we mentioned, Rich and I, just a few moments ago, things are escalating a little over in Sri Lanka. Things are changing all the times over there. And over the weekend, we've heard that Sri Lanka's central bank has doubled its key interest rates later on Friday, raising each by an unprecedented 700 basis points to try and tame the inflation that is raging at the moment. So what does that mean for everyday Sri Lankans? What does that mean for trade links between countries like the UAE and Sri Lanka and further afield? Let's get the thoughts now of the Assistant Professor, Department of Economics, IU School of Liberal Arts at Indiana University and Purdue University over in Indianapolis. An absolute thanks to Vidura Tenakun for joining us live on the line and live via Microsoft Teams at some unearthly hour, I'm sure, in Indianapolis at the moment. Vidura, thank you very much indeed for joining us live on the Business Breakfast.
Thank you, Dom.
Let's get your thoughts first and foremost on the overall situation. The reason I ask, things seem to be changing all the time in Sri Lanka. How do you read the situation at present?
So the situation is, particularly the inflation was very high. Last month, it was officially, it was 18.7%, and some academics outside the country, particularly the Professor Steve Hanke from US, has estimated the inflation to be around 55%, and food inflation officially has been 30%. So people are protesting against that. So that was the situation there. And the central bank has not taken appropriate measures to contain inflation, particularly the interest rate was not increased to as appropriate. And last Thursday, the central bank governor was changed, not just the central bank governor, also the finance minister and the secretary to the treasury, all three of them were changed. And after that, they took a decision to increase the rate by 700 basis point, as you mentioned, in order to curtail inflation. So that's what happened most recently, last week.
A simplistic approach to this. A lot of people turning around and saying, look, this is down to the fact that the Sri Lankan government have foreign currency reserves that have virtually run dry. Is it just about foreign currency reserves that we've got ourselves into this situation?
Yes, that's the main issue. So based on the official numbers, the foreign reserves have dropped to 1.9 billion by the end of March. But out of that, a big portion was currency swap from China, which can only be used to import from China. So what that means is the reserves effectively available for imports available in US dollars is probably around 400 or 500 million US dollars. And the country needs to repay its debt and interest payments amounting to the same number, like 1.9 billion during the next 2 months. And the banks, commercial banks, are in 600 million US dollars. They are in a short position of 600 million US dollars. So simply, the country is in big trouble. And right now, it imports the essentials like fuel and food using a credit line from India, which expires by the end of this month. So unless the country will be able to renegotiate and get it extended, there will be severe consequences. So that's this. situation right now.
So let's look at some of these solutions, if we can, for the more immediate future and the future. You mentioned there the new appointments when it comes to Governor of the Central Bank and the Secretary of the Treasury. Appreciate they've only been in the job a couple of days, but from what you know of their policies and plans, do they have and have they got the ability to stabilize the economy?
I think they do have a viable plan. The previous governor was, say, declining. I mean, while many independent economists were asking to go to the IMF, he was refusing and he was relying on a homegrown plan. But the new governor, say, has immediately changed the policy framework, and he has already started negotiations with IMF. With the help of IMF, I believe the country will be able to get through this, but since it has been too late, the months coming ahead will be tough for Sri Lanka, because in July, Sri Lanka needs to pay back $1 billion US dollars, a sovereign bond worth $1 billion US dollars. As it stands, it is very much likely that that Sri Lanka will have to default that for the first time in its history. So the issue is whether they will be able to negotiate with the creditors and restructure it, or will it be a hard default? So at this moment, there's a high risk of a hard default.
Without that help from the IMF, and in light of the fact that it will take time in order to negotiate those deals with IMF, are there other sources of external assistance that Sri Lanka could seek?
Definitely, it will take longer than July to get some assistance from IMF. So until that time, I'm pretty sure and they are in the process of reaching out to other friendly countries, particularly to India and China, to get some bridging funding. So that's what they are trying to do at this point. Unless they will be able to get some funding from one of the neighbors, they will have a serious problem. So that's the only hope at this point.
Fedora, we've got about 30 seconds left with you, sir. Final thoughts from you. If you were asked for your advice of how to solve the immediate problems in Sri Lanka, what would be your piece of advice to the Sri Lankan government?
At this moment, I think right now the central bank governor and the monetary board are on the right track. So the problem was they were not on the right track so far. So I was always advocating increasing the policy rates and going to the IMF as early as possible, and try to find out ways to get some cash immediately. So right now they are doing that, so I think they are on the right track.
On the right track. Fedora, really appreciate your time. I appreciate that it is very late or very early, one of the ones over there in Indianapolis. Thank you very much indeed for joining us. That was Dr. Fedora Tenakoon, Assistant Professor, Department of Economics, IU School of Liberal Arts at Indiana University and Purdue University in the States.
Just the highlights. This is the Bite-Sized Business Breakfast.
And we stay with those big economic stories now. Delighted to be joined in the studio by the Chief Emerging Markets Economist at Bloomberg Economics, Ziad Daoud. Ziad, good to have you with us. Thanks very much. Indeed.
Thank you. Good morning.
So the economics and the politics are very much colliding at the moment around the world, the emerging markets that you cover. But let's start with the root cause of it, which is food prices. Bloomberg reporting over the weekend that according to the UN food price index, climbing 13% over the past month, that is the highest rate on record. What's the story?
Well, the story is a mixture of bad luck, economic reopening after the pandemic, and the war in Ukraine. So food is determined by weather. We had bad weather over the last year. That was an element to the rise in food prices. The reopening post-pandemic, that created supply bottlenecks, labor shortages, that was an element to the price hike. The increase in oil prices and shipping costs and fertilizer costs, that's an element to the increase in food prices. And that was already happening before the war in Ukraine. And then the war happened. And Ukraine and Russia together are major food exporters. They produce or they trade about a quarter of the global wheat trade happens through these two countries. Corn, a fifth of that trade globally goes through Russia and Ukraine. About 12% of the calories traded globally come from Russia and Ukraine. So you get all these combination of factors, and we have a massive surge in food prices. Just to give you context, the UN measures a basket of food commodities. The price of that basket was $100. Suppose the cost of that basket was $100 in May 2020. By March last month, it was $175. They increased $75, so 75% in the space of less than 2 years.
Is there any light at the end of the tunnel? Any hope that some of these supply bottlenecks might be abated in coming months?
So there's good news and there's bad news. The good news is the weather element is temporary, and that could get better. The supply bottlenecks could clear up. So that could help as well. But there's bad news as well, because the war is not just disrupting current production, it's also disrupting future production. So it was reported recently that about 20 to 30% of Ukraine's cropland has been unharvested and unplanted, and that will impact future production. So there's an element that some of these factors are temporary, but some of these factors might impact food prices going forward as well.
I mean, we're seeing the impacts around the globe. Sri Lanka in particular has a very severe situation at the moment. I mean, just look at the currency. A month ago, one dirham would have got you 55 Sri Lankan rupees. Now we're closing in on 100. I think we're at 87 this morning.
Yeah, it adds more problems to Sri Lanka, which is already struggling because of the pandemic and the impact to the tourism sector. It was already struggling because it had it imports energy, and energy prices are rising rapidly. For Sri Lanka, actually, Sri Lanka is a net exporter of food. So farmers and companies that export food should benefit. But for consumers, they still face high food prices, and food is extremely political. So when food prices rise, people are taken to the street. But it's compounding other problems that the economy is facing in the case of tourism and energy imports.
And we've seen it in Lebanon as well. The IMF, of course, agreeing a deal last week, a multi-billion dollar bailout of Lebanon, or bailout, economic aid package for Lebanon, with obviously a lot of conditions attached to it in terms of reform. But The Economist did mention rising food prices and energy prices were having an impact on Lebanon. One area that we're looking at this morning is Pakistan. Of course, Imran Khan ousted as prime minister over the weekend. Tom and I were chatting earlier and suggesting that there's a similar inflation theme at play in Pakistan, in Sri Lanka, Lebanon, Turkey, other places as well. But then, Tom, we got a message from Salah who disagreed with us.
Yeah, I was rebuked by Salah. But Salah, thank you for your text message. We love opinions here on the show. Keep them coming in, 4001. Salah coming forward and saying, look, Pakistan issue is pure politics, fellas, and it's nothing to do with the economy. Please don't club the Pakistani issues together in the same sentence with the Sri Lankan issues. Look, I ain't no economist, but thankfully I've got a couple here in studio. I've asked Dini for his opinions. I'll get your thoughts as well.
I mean, it's very rare in economics or in politics or in history that you get a single reason driving everything, right? So it's a combination of factors in the case of Pakistan. There is the local political element, but there's also an economic element in the sense that Pakistan imports food and food prices are rising. It imports oil and oil costs are rising. And it's already in a deal with the IMF, and it's discussing with the IMF about disbursement of the next tranche of the loan. So there is definitely an economic side to the issues in Pakistan, and there is definitely a local political side. It's a combination of factors like most things in life.
Rising interest rates, how do they factor into this? I mean, traditional economics, when I was studying it a million years ago, the traditional cure for inflation was you raise interest rates. That's what central banks did. And we're seeing the Fed starting to do that. Obviously, that's happening here in the UAE as well. But are they going to work to solve this kind of inflation?
Well, it's a harder problem to solve for central banks, because if you raise interest rates, that's not going to give you higher food supply or lower the demand for food. What it does, it lowers demand for other elements. And we have seen interest rates rising in the US, but also a lot of emerging markets have raised interest rates already last year by a significant amount. You look at places like Brazil and Russia before the war, etc. Interest rate does work in taming inflation. And we have an experiment in emerging markets where they tried to tame inflation without raising interest rates, and that didn't work. The example is Turkey, where the inflation is rising to record highs, food prices are rising to record highs. The central bank is reluctant to raise interest rates because of the political constraints, and that didn't work in taming inflation. So that's the only that's one of the solutions that we have in controlling prices.
Finally, 20 seconds left on the UAE economy. I mean, I hate to say it, that the UAE could benefit from this, but we have got oil above $100 a barrel. It feels like the UAE economy is booming at the moment. What's your 20-second economist take on this?
The UAE and the GCC is benefits from higher oil prices. Oil prices are rising to multi-year high, and that's good for the economy here.
Ziad, great talking to you. Appreciate your time this morning. And great to have you in the studio as well.
Thank you so much. Great to be here.
You've been listening to a Dubai Eye 103.8 podcast. To enjoy lots more from Dubai Eye in the United Arab Emirates, just go to dubaieye1038.com or find them wherever you normally get your podcasts.